off at the Kulf, man. It is no holds barred. Today's program, we are bringing the heat. We are bringing the fire. On the program today, we've got Summer League craziness. Lon's watch. Where is Lonzo Ball? We've got Mayweather versus McGregor. The first press conference with plenty of trash. And we've got Wimbledon. Rafa Nadal is gone. What went wrong with the Spanish superstar? You'll find out here. This is No Holds Barred. What a program we've got today. Talk about very easy to keep the energy levels up today. This program is stacked. We're going to start with a bit of NBA news, Summer League action. Where is Lonzo Ball? We've got Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Their August 26th bout, they are on the world tour promoting it. The trash talk is flowing. We're going to talk about that briefly. And then we're going to segue on to Wimbledon. Rafael Nadal is gone. Jules Muller, what an upset. A five-set epic, and we're going to talk about that. Why did Nadal lose? What went wrong? And we're going to go through the other matchups. Wimbledon business end. There's a lot to talk about. But today, we're starting with Summer League action over there in Vegas. We're on Lon's watch. Lonzo Ball, the Lakers' prized rookie. And the Lakers were matched up against the Sacramento Kings last night. And Lonzo Ball was rested. Well, it was said that he had an injury. They talked about Lonzo Ball won't play tonight. He's got a bit of a slight groin injury. So rested, injured, sore, however you want to put it. But it was interesting, the Lakers last night playing the Sacramento Kings and their prize rookie, De'Aaron Fox out of Kentucky. So speculation was going on around Vegas and around basketball circles that Lonzo took the night off because he didn't want to face De'Aaron Fox. We know those two had a bit of a rivalry, played twice this last college season, and Fox reportedly got the better of Lonzo Ball in that matchup. So, no Lonzo last night. The Lakers dominated the contest overall and got the victory. But it's just interesting with Lonzo. Crowds have been flocking to the arena in Vegas, unlike any summer league previously over the last decade. Here's an example for you. The Celtics played the Lakers there just the other night, and there are 18,000 people packed into the stadium, and it sold out 48 hours before tip-off. And this is summer league. This is like a bunch of guys who are not going to make the NBA roster when the season starts, a bunch of guys who are trying out from Europe, from the D League, okay, and a bunch of rookies who come NBA season, day one, opening night, are going to be buried on the bench, wondering or not whether or not they're going to get any court time. It's only guys like Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox, you know, Fultz out of Philadelphia, that are going to be regular players and starters in this league from the get-go, and fans are flocking into these arenas like it's a playoff game. It is absolutely incredible, and I think a lot of it has to do with Lonzo Ball and the amount of hype that he's created since coming into the league. Now, I think Lonzo, he really has the ability to be a great player in the league. I'm not too sure if he'll be a superstar, but he has an opportunity there. Being drafted with the Lakers with their brand, and with Lonzo running the point guard position, I definitely think he has the opportunity to be a star in this league. Now, I don't know if he's going to put up amazing numbers such as, you know, 25 points, 10 dimes and 7 or 8 boards, but if he's somewhere in the, you know, 18 to 20 points a game, you know, 10 assists and, you know, 4 or 5 rebounds a game, I think he's going to provide incredible value, and playing in a market such as Los Angeles, the attention is going to be on Hollywood left, right and centre, and I think he has the opportunity to be a transcendent player over the journey, over a 10-year period. But Lons didn't play last night. De'Aaron Fox and the Lonzo Ball, they will get to see each other plenty of times throughout their career. But the Summer League is going berserk over there in Vegas, and it's great to see. So the NBA have done a great job promoting the Summer League and building it up to where, you know what, there's plenty of interest during the NBA offseason. They've done a remarkable job. The NBA is looking as healthy as ever. And with star prize rookies such as Lonzo Ball selling out arenas, things are looking up not only for the Lakers, but also for the NBA. In saying that, speaking of the Lakers, they are still on the move, making moves. Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, general manager and president of basketball operations, they have been on the phone with Rajon Rondo. We all know about Rajon Rondo, formerly of the Boston Celtics. He played shortly at the Kings, the Chicago Bulls. He's pretty much been run out of town everywhere he's been at. High basketball IQ, Rajon, but not the easiest player to get along with. He's very hard-headed, but Magic has been on the phone to Rondo, looking to bring him across to Hollywood on a one-year deal. The Lakers want to keep that cap room freed up for next year when LeBron James, Russell Westbrook and Paul George come out of contract, so they can land a couple of superstars to keep the show rolling. But Rajon Rondo, an interesting one there to come on board, perhaps for a one-year deal, and just provide some savvy veteran leadership and a high basketball IQ. So it would be interesting to see if the Lakers can fit Rajon Rondo in, because the Lakers have, this is news just in, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, formerly of the Detroit Pistons, has signed a one-year, $18 million deal with the Los Angeles Lakers to come in and play the shooting guard position. So that's an upgrade for LA, and they've got him for 1 year, which is just what they were after, so they can free up that, they can have that cap room free for next year for an assault in the LeBron James, Westbrook and Paul George stakes. Now, a little bit of a side story here with Caldwell Pope. He does have the same agent as, wait for it, LeBron James. And word out of Cleveland is LeBron looks like he is happy to hang around in Cleveland for the next year, make a run at it, at these Golden State Warriors next year. But word is that, you know, it's all but over. He wants to leave town because he is just at loggerheads constantly with Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert. And not good news for Cleveland fans or for Dan Gilbert. Good news for the rest of the league, though, and good news for those teams that are out on the West Coast, because it looks like LeBron James has had enough of Cleveland. He's done what he's had to do there, and it looks like he's going to head for the hills and sign somewhere else next year. Now, as I said, the side note is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's agent is LeBron James's agent. So there is a connection there. Read into it what you may, but I think that is very interesting. Smart move from Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka going out and getting Caldwell Pope, keeping that connection to LeBron James for a possible assault to get LBJ in the purple and gold next season. Paul George has arrived in Oklahoma City. Fans were flocking at the airport there as Paul George arrived there. They're excited to have him in town. And, you know, they are hoping that he hangs around for after this year. It looks like a one-year rental for him. Paul George has said that he wants to be a Los Angeles Laker after next season. But the fans there in Oklahoma City are hoping that they can convince him to stay around with a great organisation such as OKC. Well, a well-run organisation with Sam Presti there, the general manager. But I think they've got their work cut out for him. I don't think George wants to hang around there. I think he'll head to the West Coast after the season. But time will tell. It's definitely an interesting one there. And it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out. Coming up next on No Holds Barred, I'm going to talk about some of these crazy contracts that are going on in the NBA. James Harden, we know, signed for $230 million earlier on in the week. And we were going to come back here at No Holds Barred. So some of these contracts that are being signed in the NBA, we've seen nothing like it. You know, Harden signed there the end of last week for $228, 4-year extension. And look, I haven't got a problem with superstars and NBA stars, you know, getting paid that amount of money. That's fine. I understand that. The problem I have is these other contracts that these players that are not stars at all. They're nowhere near stars. They're basically role players. I'm not paying the amount of money that these guys are getting. And I think sometimes these franchises and these teams have nothing but to blame but themselves by, you know, throwing this amount of money around. Now, I don't mind, you know, a Steph Curry getting $201 million or Harden $228 or, you know, LeBron, you know, $300. You know, they are worth that amount of money. You know, these guys are, you know, transcendent players. They're top five players in the league. I've got no problems paying my stars. But I'm not paying Otto Porter $105 million when he averages 12 points a game. And he can shoot a three-pointer every once in a while. Okay? I mean, that's just ridiculous. I'm going out and I'm getting stars. The Houston Rockets, James Harden, and they've made some moves. Their general manager, Daryl Morey, has gone out and got Chris Paul, and now he's working frantically behind the scenes to get Carmelo Anthony to come across there as well. And all I'm hearing are people saying, well, how's that going to work? Like, with those three guys, they all need the ball in their hand. Well, yeah, they all need the ball in their hand, but you're not beating the Golden State Warriors by holding on to draft picks like Danny Ainge is up there in Boston. They've improved slightly, but they gave up Avery Bradley, their second-best player, to bring in Gordon Hayward, so they're slightly better. But they've still got all these draft picks, and out of all the draft picks, all the picks that Danny Ainge has picked out of the draft over the last 4 years, not one of them has been an all-star. So it's a star-driven league, and if there's a superstar or a star player out there, you've got to go get him right now. You've got to get him. Because I'm not one to pay Otto Porter $105 million. Or I'm not having Chandler Parsons come to me and say, hey, man, hey, bro, you pay me $110 or I'm leaving town. You know what I'm saying to Chandler Parsons? I'm saying, hey, let me buy your ticket, Chandler. Okay? Goodbye. You know, the leverage that some of these players have got. Now, just because they can hit a three-pointer or because they've come into the league at the right time, it's just outrageous. You know, Mike Conley, he's another one. He's not an elite point guard. He's probably the next level down. He's probably a mid-tier point guard. You know, middle of the range. Signed a huge deal there a couple of seasons ago just based on the fact that, hey, we don't want him going anywhere else. Well, he doesn't. Mike Conley is a good, reliable point guard, but he's not leading you to the NBA Finals. And they're the players that you need. I've got no problem paying stars. Go and get the star player. Go and get Kristaps Porzingis. Pay him $200 million. Okay? But don't hold on to draft picks and hope that, hey, we're going to do it through the draft. You know, how many How many players, it's very rare that you draft a player and they stick around at your franchise for 15 years and they become a 14, 15-time All-Star, win you NBA championships, Hall of Fame. No, very, very rare. You know, Kobe Bryant is one that stands out, you know. LeBron James, yes, he's one you draft, and he left, you come back, now he's going to leave again. But it's very rare that you do it through the draft and you develop the player and you keep him, okay? You've got to go out and you've got to make trades. You've got to put draft picks together, make trades, make moves, just like the Rockets are doing. Melo, Chris Paul, James Harden. Oh, how are they going to work out? There's only one basketball. How are they going to work it out? They'll figure it out. They will figure it out. I'm picking a team with three guys like that to figure it out and win than a team with Chandler Parsons and Otto Porter. So it just blows my mind. I mean, Otto Porter, $105 million. I remember when Alonzo Mourning signed with the Miami Heat. And his was a seven-year deal at about that, about $105 to $110 million. I think it was the same year Shaquille O'Neal went from the Orlando Magic to the Lakers. 7 years and 120. Shaquille O'Neal is arguably the most dominant center to ever play this game. And the amount of money that's being thrown around to guys such as, you know, such these role players like Otto Porter and Parsons and Conley. Imagine what Shaquille O'Neal would be worth. It'd be a $500 million contract. I mean, it is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, you know, you got to have the stars, though. You got to have the stars. You look at Golden State. You know, Durant, Curry, Green, Iguodala, Thompson. You know, five deep star players. You know, you've got Cleveland, Love, Irving, LeBron. They're short one more. At least Houston are in the game now. They've got James Harden, Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony possibly. They're working frantically to get him. And you get these guys, you talk about this kind of stuff, and they go, oh, yeah, but how, you know, how are three guys that need the ball, how are they gonna figure it out? They'll figure it out. They're superstars. They'll figure it out. They want to win. That's the whole idea. But Danny Ainge is holding draft picks going, yep, we're just going to be patient. We're going to be patient with this one. Then you got Isaiah Thomas coming out of contract next year. What, you're going to pay him $200 million? A 5'7" point guard? When was the last time a 5'8" point guard led you to the NBA championship? Never, because it's never happened. And it's not going to happen. So if you're Danny Ainge, get on the phone to New York. Inquire about Kristaps Porzingis. The Knicks are that diabolical in terms of personnel and making decisions. The worst run franchise in the league, arguably, that you'd probably get him on the cheap anyway. Give up three first rounders for Porzingis, and all of a sudden, you're in the game. Until then, stop talking about draft picks and, yep, we're going to be okay. We're going to wait it out. We've got a master plan. No, I don't think you've got a plan. I think you're clueless. Houston got the right idea. They're making moves now. They're getting star players. And then you know what? They're going to figure it out on the fly. That's the way to do it. It's a star-driven league. Go and get your stars. This is No Holds Barred. Still saving my best nut, but you better cover your rhymes, because you never know when I spit it out and start some flowing. I drop rhymes that grow like trees you're smoking. Your drums feel like lungs, your brains... Drake, let it run. We're back here at No Holds Barred, and we're going to segue on to this circus act that will be going on August the 26th, the Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor World Tour promotional tour is in full effect, and the first press conference took place there yesterday, and you know, thoughts on this setup here or this matchup. It's really a tough one. Personally, I think this is just a basic money grab. And I think the fight in itself is not going to be as entertaining as the promotional tour and the trash talk that these two are going to go back and forth over the next month and a half. And what I saw yesterday really backs up everything that I think about this fight. It's just going to be all hype. How you could expect McGregor to come in here and just be a straight-up boxer, not being able to use his feet or his martial arts skills and tactics that he's professionally trained in when he fights in the UFC, and expect him to win a fight against Floyd Mayweather, who has never lost and has barely been hit over the course of his career, is kind of hard to believe. But, you know, it's entertainment nonetheless, okay? To have a boxer versus a mixed martial artist, and, you know, I just think to fight under Mayweather's rules, where it's just hand combat, nothing else that even resembles UFC, even the octagon itself. I just think that this is just nothing but a money grab, without a doubt. Now, yeah, they're going to make a lot of money, these guys, because people are going to plug in and they're going to watch this. They're going to be fascinated by this. And I just hope that when it's all said and done on August 26th, that it's just not an embarrassment to both these guys and to the sport, I guess, of combat. Now, hopefully McGregor can get out there and put a few on Mayweather and make it a fight, make it interesting. But, you know, pundits are talking about, you know, Mayweather should be able to run rings around McGregor because it's on his terms, it's his rules. And the amount of money that these two are going to be generating with this, you know, this promotional world circus tour, I guess I like to call it, will be astronomical. But the first press conference yesterday, Conor McGregor was suited up, looking $1 million, and all he could do was make fun of Mayweather, who was dressed up in a tracksuit, dressed in the American colours, flag colours. And these two went at it toe-to-toe, talking absolute smack talk and trash, which is what we love, and it was entertaining nonetheless. It was just the usual antics from these two. Mayweather has been one of the best trash talkers and fight promoters you know, over the course of his career, and there's no one like Conor McGregor in the UFC. He's a renowned trash talker, talking absolute smack, berating his opponent, playing the mind games, and that's what I enjoy the most. I enjoy the mind games, and there's none better than McGregor, and whether or not he's going to be able to make a dent once that fight rolls around on August 26th and to shake up Mayweather is yet to be seen. I haven't decided whether or not I will be watching. I will definitely be watching the circus act as it goes ahead, as they stop in certain cities promoting the fight, and you know, some of the numbers that you'll hear that this fight generates and this these two athletes make will actually blow you away. I just hope that come August 26th that it's not a flop. I hope that they provide value and they provide the fans get their money's worth, and that's all I hope. I would love to see McGregor knock Mayweather out. That'd be absolutely fantastic, but I hope they put on a good show. And I hope there's plenty of value for all that that tune in. This is No Holds Barred. We're gonna have a problem. Dre's dead, he's locked in my basement. Feminist women love him and them. What a show so far. Gee whiz. We're just getting warmed up. I've got a few things that I want to touch on here that's going on over there at Wimbledon. Some real controversy over there with the court conditions. We're going to get into that here soon. And I want to talk about some of these coaches that just seem to show up when the cameras are on. Spoke about Mark Philippoussis there about a week ago. I've got a bone to pick with a couple of other guys, but we're going to get into that here soon. You need to hang around for that. But Wimbledon, I said we're in the business end right now, and I'm going to fly through some results here because I want to talk about Nadal. Nadal is out. Jules Muller has put him to the sword. 15-13 in the fifth set. I'm going to talk about why Nadal went from the overall favourite to on the next flight back to Madrid. But first of all, we're going to talk results. And Thomas Berdych moved through to the quarterfinal stage. He got over Dominic Thiem. I said this one was going to be a tight one. And it was 6-3 in the fifth for Berdych. His grass court experience got him through in that one there. So Thomas Berdych gets a crack at Novak Djokovic. Djokovic got through last night. I told you it would be a walk in the park, and it was. He played Mannarino, who was way out of his depth, way out of his class. It was 6-2, 7-6, 6-4. Novak hardly raised a sweat. Just a practice run for him. Andy Murray got through against Benny Pair. I mentioned in the lead-up to that one that Pair is a loose cannon, and he was dominating that first set early on, but mentally got fragile, started hitting drop shots for some idiotic reason in typical Benoit Pair style, and he went down in straight sets, and Murray stays alive with that one there. Pair pretty much defeated himself. He was looking good that every time he got himself in a leading position, he would go away from his game plan. He'd go away from the tactics that got him there. And that's why Benny Pair is not an elite top 10 player, because he just doesn't think the way an elite player should think. So he's out. He's on the next plane back to Paris. And Murray moves forward. Sam Querrey and Kevin Anderson put on an absolute classic. That one, I said, was a 50-50 matchup, and it was 6-3 in the fifth to Sam Querrey. He got through. Kevin Anderson, a good tournament from him. His best result so far. But Querrey moves through. He beat Djokovic last year, Querrey, and he's backed that up with another fantastic run here at Wimbledon. A good win there from the American. Marin Cilic defeated the Spaniard. Batista Agut just blew him away. 6-2, 6-2, 6-2. So Marin, his game on the fast courts, big serve, big flat ground strokes, and Agut basically tapped out of that one there. He showed no heart. I expected that one to be a little bit closer, but picked Cilic to win nonetheless. So Cilic moves forward. He is gaining momentum. Milos Raonic beat my guy Zverev. I picked Zverev to get through here, but Zverev did not convert. He only converted 3 of 17 break points. And when you are only converting that many break points at that clip, then you don't deserve to win. And Alex Zverev is out of the tournament. Big Milos moves through there, 6-1 in the fifth set. Zverev, I think, will be a Grand Slam champion over the next 2 to 3 years, but it won't be this year. He needs to work on his big point match tactics there. 3 of 17 on break points. Definitely won't get the job done, and he paid the price for that one. And Roger Federer versus Grigor Dimitrov, two of the finer athletes on the planet, on the tour. I spoke about how Federer was patchy against Misha Zverev the round before, and Grigor came in one of the hottest players. Well, Grigor has left his A game at the door again. Too many forehand errors, too loose from the back of the court, and Federer steamrolled Dimitrov, 6-4, 6-2, 6-4. And Dimitrov moves to 0-6 against Roger Federer, with most of those losses coming in Grand Slam events on the big stage. So Dimitrov pulls up short, and he's got to go back to the drawing board and work out what he can do to break through in these big, big matches and get some consistency for the rest of the year. Coming up next, Nadal versus Muller. Why he is out here at No Holds Barred.
Me for the term universe.
We're back here at No Holds Barred, and Rafael Nadal has been bundled out of the championships for 2017 by Jules Muller of Luxembourg. It was an epic match, 6-3, 6-4, 3-6, 4-6, 15-13 in the fifth to Muller. And going into this one, Muller was a guy that I suspected could give Nadal trouble. with his big lefty serve, one of the best serves in world tennis. But to have Nadal out of the championships after he was in such impressive form is a shock. There's no doubt about that, because he was looking sublime. His movement, his racket head acceleration, his court coverage, his mental toughness, his fight, everything was there. But now, incredibly, Nadal is out. And if you had have noticed this match or seen some of the highlights or tuned in for a little bit of time, you would have noticed a few things that went on tactically from Nadal that I truly believe has cost him a run at this year's championship. If you had noticed, Nadal was standing way back near the backdrop when Muller was serving, and it's something that Nadal does, especially on a clay court and on a hard court as well, the majority of the time. And I believe this defensive positioning on a grass court is the reason why he's out of the tournament this year. And I don't know what his mentor, Uncle Tony, and Carlos Moyer and his coaching staff were doing, but they should have been in Nadal's ear for him to stand up in the court, okay, and to dominate from the baseline like he did in the first three rounds. First three rounds, he was nothing but awesome. He was up on the line. He was taking the ball early, hitting the ball on the rise, dictating, being aggressive. And all of a sudden, he went into defensive mode, and he paid the price. There's no way in the world that standing back there that far, sometimes 2 meters behind the baseline on a grass court, is going to be a benefit to your game once the game starts, let alone when you're facing a server, a left-handed server like Jules Muller, one of the best servers on the planet. Okay, all Muller was doing was pulling the Nadal wide, okay, wide, especially on the backhand court where his lefty served wide into Nadal's forehand, which stayed low, okay, opening up the court and then knocking the ball into the open court, whether it's from the baseline or serve and volleying. And he picked his spots. Muller was smart. He didn't come in willy-nilly. He didn't charge the net every single point and be predictable. Sometimes he stayed back. Sometimes he came in. He kept Nadal guessing and off balance. But Nadal did himself no favours at all by starting each point so far back in the court. It was a defensive mindset. And on a grass court, starting from way back there puts you at a real disadvantage. And Nadal paid the price in a very, very big way. Because he was so far back, once the point started, his ground strokes, they lacked the penetration that they did in the earlier rounds. Okay? When he was a metre, 2 metres behind the baseline, rolling the ball in with heavy spin, Muller was able to dictate. He was able to take the ball on the right. He's a big man, Muller. He stands at about 6'4", 6'5", and he was able to take that ball on the rise, the ball bouncing up in his hitting zone, where he could hit maximum velocity and picky spots, and Nadal was off balance, and Muller continued to club winner after winner, as well as serve upwards of 30 bombs as well. So the tactics from Nadal were absolutely blew me away, and I believe it was poor coaching from his mentor, Uncle Tony, and from his coaching staff. I believe Carlos Moyer is still involved there, but Nadal paid the price for a poor strategy, poor tactics from his behalf, and all of a sudden he found himself off balance, and and to convert 2 of 16 break points as well because of that defensive mindset, because of that defensive stance, Muller was able to get out of trouble time and time again, and he was able to attack, and in the end, it cost the Spanish superstar the title here in 2017. Nadal out. You're listening to No Holds Barred. Lure your kids with him into bed. It's a sick world we live in these days. Just a mind-boggling strategy from Nadal. And to have his coaching staff not have him play up in the court like he should have been, have him so far back there on a grass court, never going to work, never going to work. And that was a big mistake. He's played a lot of big match tennis, especially at Wimbledon. He should have known better than that. And Muller took advantage there and Nadal paid the price. I just didn't get it. I didn't get it. He didn't make any adjustments at all, and it cost him. Anyway, we're going to talk about, we're going to stay on the Wimbledon topic here. We're going to talk about court conditions. We did speak about this briefly a couple of programs ago when I spoke about my good friend, then Davis Cup court curator, Shane Reid, the court curator for the Australian Davis Cup team, whenever they play on grass. We spoke about the courts bruising and leaving a mark and being dewy and a little bit damp. And player safety has been a big issue. And during Novak Djokovic's dominant display against Mannarino in round four, a real walk in the park for the Serbian champ, he noticed a couple of holes in the court, and he brought it to the umpire's attention. And he was concerned with the safety of the court, the playability, the way the court is, and he's come out in the media and spoken about it. Other players have come forward as well. There's been a lot of falls, a lot of issues on the outside courts, as opposed to the show courts, and players are not really happy with the court conditions. And, you know, the ground staff and the court curators there at Wimbledon have come under under fire, a scathing attack. Now, they've come out and obviously defended their defended the situation, defended the way they have prepared the courts this year, and they've got to come out and do that, and they've got to protect their brand. Of course, they're going to say that, but you know, there is no denying that the courts this year are not in the condition that they have been previously. And I spoke with Shane today, and he brought it to my attention that, you know what, he's been watching the event closely. He loves Wimbledon. He did do some work over there at Wimbledon in the early 2000s, 2003, 2002, around that area, around the Patrick Rafter, Goran Ivanišević show down there. This guy is the best in the business, and he has said to me, he said, Jade, the court conditions, they've never been worse there. And the players are backing that up. The players are not happy. I expect to hear more about this as the second week progresses. And when you have holes in the courts, especially at the Wimbledon Championships, then it is a major, major concern. I mean, this is Wimbledon. It doesn't get any bigger, and this is absolutely unacceptable. There is no excuse for this whatsoever. You know, this is the holy grail of tennis. 2 weeks. It is the showcase event on the calendar for both the ATP Tour and the WTA Tours. And the players, you know, deserve better. And I guess so do the fans. And, you know, the ground staff and the court curators, they are in damage control right now. And as I said, this is the Wimbledon Championships. There really shouldn't be any excuse for this. It's Wimbledon. It is not the, you know, the Wamagama Grass Court Championships. This is the Holy Grail. And the courts should be in pristine condition. Players should feel safe when they are out there. And we've seen this over time. The courts have changed significantly from, you know, the late 90s. They've changed the court to one that is more comfortable for baseline play. Okay, more comfortable for viewing, and it's so much harder to serve and volley these days and come to the net. In fact, the advantage that attacking players used to have on the grass courts, they no longer have. It's become more of a baseline game. They don't do it with the French Open. They don't speed the French Open courts up, so I don't know why they would want to slow down the Wimbledon grass courts and make it more of a neutral court instead of a, you know, one that serves the attacking players and helps them. But the courts have never been worse, and it's unacceptable. And it needs to improve. This is no holds barred.
Oh, fuck it. I'll even buy a couple myself.
I mean, have you seen these courts? It's just not good enough. They should be the old traditional grass. That the courts should be curated so they favour attacking players like a grass court. So you've got all three surfaces. You've got a hard court. You've got the French Open, where you know, defensive players. It's a slow surface. And then you've got Wimbledon, where serving volleyers and attacking players, they should get the reward. Slowing the courts down for baseline play, unacceptable. Roger Federer should have over 10 Wimbledon championships. But because they changed the court, he loses to guys like Nadal and Djokovic on grass. Federer on a traditional grass court would never lose to those guys. Another fact. You know, we're in the last segment here at No Holds Barred. It's been a big show. It's been a massive show. And I just want to finish on an interesting one here with the coaching side of things. And we've got all these top players that are, you know, linking up with these former top players and this super coach kind of setup. And I'm going to talk about Andre Agassi, who is in Novak Djokovic's corner for the Wimbledon Championships. I don't know if it's going to be an ongoing scenario or matchup, but you know, I spoke about Philippoussis the other week there in terms of Kokkinakis and what can he bring to the table and what value can he provide. Well, I just don't understand the thinking of Andre Agassi coming on board the Novak Djokovic train and sitting in his corner and helping him win more Grand Slams, I guess you could say. Or, you know, coming on board from a coaching standpoint and, you know, helping Novak improve and get better and, you know, win more slams, if that's obviously what he's aiming to do. Mario Ancic is also in Novak's corner, the former Croatian top 10 player. And it just got me thinking. It's like, I just don't understand, you know, why these super coaches come on and jump on board with these super players. If anything, Andre Agassi is better off coaching somebody else and lifting them up to a much higher level. Say, bringing someone from, you know, the top 50 in the world to top 10 in the world. That would be a tremendous coaching job. That would be, you know, better for the game than to come on board and to help Novak Djokovic dominate and win even more than what he already has. Now, whether or not he wins more slams is yet to be seen. But, you know, I use the Grigor Dimitrov thing for an example. I was in a discussion today where I said, you know, I'm tired of, like, you know, Agassi jumps in, links up with Novak. Agassi would be much better going and helping, let's say, a Grigor Dimitrov go from where he's at, top 15 in the world, and helping him develop and grow and get to number one in the world. It would be much better for the sport for Agassi to coach Dimitrov from where he's at to number one in the world than to jump on and coach Novak and help him win like a couple more Grand Slams, if that's what he's able to do. I'm just tired of seeing the, you know, the former star player jumping in and, you know, with the superstar, just because it's the cool thing to do. And ironically, once again, this has happened just before Wimbledon, when for 2 weeks, the focus is totally on Wimbledon. And here's Agassi sitting up there in the box. Yeah, I'm with Novak now. I'm with Novak. You know, he's better off coaching. These guys are better off coaching players that, you know, that haven't fulfilled their potential yet. Someone like a Grigor Dimitrov or someone outside the top 20, a young player who hasn't fulfilled their potential and, you know, are underachieving. These are the players that an Agassi, for example, if they want to get into the coaching ranks, should be linking up with and helping them develop and helping them mature and helping them grow and helping them maximize their potential talents and gifts into the top 10, into the top 5, to number 1 in the world. It just blows my mind. They just jump on. They just jump on the bandwagon and join the big show. Now, what's the value in that? What's the point in that? What's the challenge in that? Super coach joins super player. Meanwhile, there's players that, you know, are not fulfilling their potential and maximising their gifts. And, you know, there'd be much more value in helping them from a coaching standpoint and from a challenge standpoint and from a integrity standpoint to develop them and grow them, be much better for the game than, you know, hey, let's form up and let's team up and get in front of the camera and help Novak win Wimbledon or win another US Open. You know, whether or not he's able to do that is yet to be seen, as I said earlier on. But, you know, Andre Agassi, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of what's going on, especially with that situation. And, you know, word has it that, you know, and this is, you know, the inside scoop here, that Andre has been living it up, nonetheless, in London over the 2 weeks. You know, lapping up the atmosphere, so to speak, the nightlife. Okay, so how serious is Andre Agassi? I mean, really, how serious is he in terms of that? You know, the other one I like to talk about is Darren Cahill. Okay, the Australian coach. You know, has had the best jobs of all of them. Okay, worked a little bit with Agassi, then jumped on Leighton Hewitt's coattails and bandwagon. Okay, now he's currently coaching Simona Halep from Romania, and has been for a while. Now, Halep, one of the best female athletes on the planet. There's no doubt about that. She was top 10 in the world when he came on board to help her out. And she hasn't done anything greater now that Darren Cahill has been in her corner than before he arrived. Okay, yes, you may say, oh, well, hang on, Jade. She's number 2 in the world right now. She's moved up. Well, no Serena Williams for obvious reasons. She's out of the game. She's pregnant. No Victoria Azarenka. Same reason. She's just making her way back. No Maria Sharapova. She's been out of the game because of the performing enhancing drug situation. She's only just, you know, making her way back. So the women's game is not what it used to be. And Halep has done nothing but underachieve. Losing in the French Open final as one of the favourites. Losing here last night to Joanna Konta after being a set up. She continues to pull up short time and time again. And Darren Cahill gets a free pass. And I just don't understand it. Again, another super coach with another super player set up. You want to impress me? If Darren Cahill wants to impress me, go and coach. Why don't you put your hand up and coach Nick Kyrgios? Why don't you say, Nick, I'm going to coach you. I'm going to coach you from where you are now, around about 20 in the world, okay, in free fall, mindset all over the place, you know, physical limitations, not putting the work in. How about I come on board and help you maximize your potential, Nick? How about I help you get back in the top? How about I get you into the top 10, okay, into the top 5, and to the number 1 ranking in the world? You know, winning multiple Grand Slams, maximising your potential, fulfilling your potential. Oh, no, but you don't see that. You don't see that from these guys. That may be too difficult. That may stretch the coaching capabilities of a Cahill or an Agassi. They may have to invest too much time, too much blood, sweat and tears for that to take place. You know, it just blows me away. If these guys rate themselves so highly, go and coach a Dimitrov or a Kyrgios. Get in their corner and help them develop and maximise their potential and their gifts. It'd be much better for the sport than jumping on Novak's coattails or Halep's coattails and looking into the camera.
Yes, sir.
You know, so it doesn't impress me at all. Being a so-called super coach and teaming up with a super player that's already well and firmly entrenched in the top 5 in the world, either on the men's or women's side of the game, does nothing for the game at all on a global scale. and it does nothing from a coaching perspective to prove that you're a fantastic coach. The player's already established. The player's already elite. The player's already super elite, winning grand slams, winning tournaments week in, week out. Go and take on a player that is not doing that, but has the potential to do that. Help that player go from where they are to where they should be. And there's a ton of them out there. Nick Kyrgios is one of them. Why can't Cahill call Nick and say, Nick, I want to coach you. Enough's enough. You're going backwards. It's time to fulfill your potential, fulfill your ability. I can help you go top 10, top 5 where you belong. And then from there, we can crack number 1. You'll be a multiple Grand Slam champion and superstar. I can show you the way. No, but you don't see that from Cahill. You're seeing just slip in, helping Halep, who was already elite, already established, and she's done nothing but underachieve since he came on board. Better off giving back to the game by coaching a Kyrgios and help him get to the top of the ladder, the top of the game. Same with Agassi. Agassi teaming up with Novak does nothing for the game at all. Helping a guy, a young star like Dimitrov, go from where he's at, top 15, inconsistent form, helping him go top 10, top 5, number 1 in the world, help him win 4 or 5 majors, help him crack through, help him break through, fulfill his athletic gifts and talents. It'll do so much more for the game on a global level instead of sitting there in the box for 2 weeks over Wimbledon clapping Novak every time he hits a backhand winner as the cameras roll. Oh, there's Andre. What a program today, huh? Just super, super stuff going on everywhere. NBA Summer League, the Mayweather-McGregor circus act. We're going to bring you more of that as it gets closer, August 26th. And of course, Wimbledon, second week in full effect. More matches tonight. We're going to bring you the matchups tomorrow. We're going to give you some live action tonight from No Holds Barred Studio. So stay tuned for that. We've got the big guns in action. Federer, Murray, Novak. It should be a tremendous show. Hope you've enjoyed today's show. It's been great bringing it to you from the No Holds Barred Studio. This is No Holds Barred.